John Lewis was a bodhisattva. I don't imagine that's a big surprise. I was talking about him a lot with the folks in Arcata last weekend, and I kept thinking, I don't think I talked about this in Vallejo yet. And if I did, forgive me, because I'm going to do it again. I watched one of the documentaries about him. I think it was called Get in the Way. Get in the Way. And I've been thinking a lot about the way that he followed, which is called nonviolence, but it's a stronger notion than that. It's satyagraha, which is a Sanskrit term that you may have heard. That's that Gandhi talked about it a lot, and King talked about it a lot. Satya means truth or love. And the root is sat, which is being. And I think we probably have a strong relationship with it through Buddhism and Zen. It isn't love in any kind of sappy sense. It's love in the sense of maybe agape. It's sort of almost impersonal love, the love that permeates, the love that is connection. Not separate from truth. And graha means to hold firmly. It means force. I saw a couple of times it said insistence. And it's tied very closely with the notion, a word you may have heard before, ahimsa, which we usually translate not harming. And they're not separate. But it's the kind of force that's not about being aggressive and slugging somebody. It's a kind of firmly manifesting, perhaps, manifesting what you understand to be true, so that if you believe that you should be able to sit in any open seat on a bus, you simply do so. You don't do so out of anger, you don't push somebody else out of a seat in order to get it. You just sit down. And part of the moral force of it is you accept the consequences. And if you think that you should be able to walk from Selma to Montgomery, you walk. You start right across that bridge. And if you get your head bashed, then you get your head bashed. And so on. Lewis said that nonviolence is love in action. It's not a passive thing. It's an active thing. But it's really, really important to do it without hatred. I think I put in the newsletter that hatred is a heavy burden. Lay it down. And thinking of it in terms, satyagraha, in terms of this kind of expression of love, he said about, he was talking about the lunch counter sit-ins, which were very early on. He started that as a college student, you know, with other people in Nashville, right? And he said, I could no longer go along with an oppressive system and keep loving the people who denied me service. What a stunning thought. I couldn't keep loving them anymore unless I got in the way, unless I stopped going along with the oppressive system. So that we can understand that he was doing it for all of us. All of us. Not just for other black people in the South, or in the North for that matter, but for everybody. And he found that he could not love everybody if he went along with it. I think because he understood that to go along with that system hurt everybody. It hurt the white people as well as the black people. It hurt Bull Connor. It hurt George Wallace. And hate is too heavy a burden. Lay it down. So that if, another way of understanding that is, if you don't stand up, or sit down in this case, then in some sense that's letting hatred win, because if you don't stand up, then it's going to turn into bitterness inside you. He said, through nonviolence, courage displaces fear, love transforms hate, acceptance dissipates prejudice, peace dominates war, faith reconciles doubt, and hope ends despair. Through satyagraha, courage displaces fear, and love transforms hate. I think that once he made the commitment to himself to stand up or sit in, whatever, he realized that it needed to come from a place of ahimsa, of not harming. And that's what one of the things that Gandhi talked about a lot, non-harming, that there needs to be love and respect, and that actions need to not come from hatred and anger. And that's basic bodhisattva. There is a wonderful quote I watched this documentary and I just kept writing down great things that he said. And we talked about a bodhisattva's one way of understanding the notion that we're all bodhisattvas, or you see bodhisattva in everybody, is that there is a spark somewhere. There is a kernel somewhere. And we cover it up, and that's the problem. And some people, it's very deeply buried, I think. So he said, in every personality, there is something good, decent, sacred. And we don't have a right to go around damaging another personality. In every personality, there's something good, decent, sacred. And we don't have a right to go around damaging another personality. And every time we act out of anger or hatred, we are damaging ourselves, and we're damaging the other. And we don't have a right to damage ourselves or anybody else. He also said, you know, I don't like getting my head bashed in. I don't like going to the hospital. I don't like suffering. But if that's the price I have to pay, I'll pay it. And he did pay it without anger. I mean, folks who knew him in Congress and otherwise said after he died, you know, that he didn't seem to hate anybody. His advice was, don't take it personally, in terms of Congress especially. He said, don't take it personally. Everybody who's here chose to be here. And hating people isn't going to get us anywhere. That's a very rough translation. Let's see, what did he say? Never, ever become bitter or hostile. You shouldn't take anything personal. This is politics. This is the business. This is the job that someone asked for. Sometimes we get bruised. Sometimes we get knocked down. But we have the will, the courage, the ability, and the capacity to get up, to find a way to get in the way, to get people to see what is happening. That will only come by people building and working together. We're talking about building a lasting peace, a community in peace with itself. They often talked about a beloved community, and a community in peace with itself. So he was quite willing to get in the way. I don't know if you remember, but he led a Democratic sit-in on the floor of the House of Representatives. So it wasn't just bridges and lunch counters and so on before the Civil Rights Act. And as you probably know, the day before he went in the hospital to die, he went to Black Lives Matter in Washington Plaza in Washington, D.C. That this notion of satyagraha, of coming from a place of truth, a place of love, and I would say a place of humility, just in case. Because, you know, when you say, I know what's right, you're in trouble, right? I know we talked about don't know mind. So coming from a place of I have thought about this and considered it and consulted my heart, and this seems right to me. And I am going to stand up and say so. It's more like that, I think. And I'm not going to say so with hateful words or bitterness in my heart. I'm just going to say so. And classic bodhisattva, I will accept the consequences of my action. You know, we say often, you know, the first precept is not killing. And if a bodhisattva had to kill somebody in order to save 500 others, then a bodhisattva would do that. And accept the consequences because the bodhisattva would have killed somebody. So the bodhisattvas that Lewis hung out with accepted the consequences. So what does it mean for our lives? I think each of us has to make that decision ourselves. I'm not suggesting that you go out and get your head beaten in. But I think Lewis's example, John Lewis's example, is an encouragement for us. We can take it as an encouragement for us to live our lives, and to come from a place of loving kindness in our own hearts and work on uncovering that kernel or spark in ourselves. One of the things Gandhi talked about, I'm not sure about King or Lewis, they may very well have also, but he talked about being, that it was absolutely basic to be in touch with yourself and to be able to own your faults and work on them and so on, so that the finger isn't always pointing out there, because I have plenty of fear, hate, prejudice, war, despair, whatever. I have plenty of that stuff. Greed, hate, and delusion, as we say. They make the world go round. So in order to come from a place of non-harming and non-hating, I need to be willing to see my own hatred and so on. And I don't know whether John Lewis struggled with that or not. I mean, people say that he always treated everybody as if he, with kindness and generosity, that, you know, I guess that he would say that he saw the Christ in them, in us all. And I don't know how he thought about, you know, he didn't, as the president so recently famously said, he didn't come to my inauguration. He didn't come to any of the, State of the Union speech. It's his right, but he didn't come to the Delta. And Lewis said that he didn't go because he didn't think that the election was legitimate, given that Hillary Clinton got 3 million more votes. And I think you could see that not as hatred, but as satyagraha, as standing up for what he felt was the right thing. And in a way, not taking the easy way, because it's easy to go to those things and say, I respect the office of the presidency. And how do we take this into our own hearts? How do we learn from him? Just the way we learn from Avalokiteshvara, the way we learn from Manjushri. I don't know that I doubt that I will ever be as morally strong as John Lewis. And at the same time, I can hold him in my heart as this exemplar, as a, what is it that Uchiyama says, have a direction and not a goal? I could have him as a direction that I want to not hate. And that I want to see the spark that's so hidden in so many people. I want to see it in everybody. Blanche used to say that she wanted to see the Buddha. She tried to see the Buddha in everybody. And I did. I mentioned this at the check-in of the full moon ceremony. It just struck me the other day about the president. I knew that he kind of plays to his base and so on, but it occurred to me, maybe this is obvious, but it just the kind of thing that really hit home, that I think he's afraid of those people. He's afraid of losing them. He's afraid of being rejected by them. I don't know, but I think that's probably true. And it helps me, seeing that helps me with not hating him. It helps me see him perhaps a little more clearly. And certainly you can tell from John Lewis' example, it doesn't mean that you say, oh, okay. No, you get in the way. You get in good trouble. And each of us has to decide what that means. And how we practice with this. How do we lay down the burden of hate? How do we stand up in the middle of our lives? How do we say, this is my truth? Like this, though, not like that. This is my truth. So, see, there was. Oh, yeah. I have a quote here, and I'm not sure. But it just seems like this is his understanding of satyagraha, I bet. But it's just a one line. Force of this soul against the system. Force of this soul. I think that's satyagraha. Soul force against the system. But that's what he decided to be, decided to do. And what does it mean in my life? What does it mean in your life, if anything? What do we mean when we say, I'm a bodhisattva, you're a bodhisattva? Sometimes we say baby bodhisattvas, sometimes we say bodhisattvas in training. Sometimes I say, Avalokiteshvara and Samantabhadra and Manjushri are way too, I don't know, I'd say great for me. They're above my pay grade. and so part of me wants to say, well, forget it. They're just aspirational saints or something. And yet we say, we just did, all beings, bodhisattvas, mahasattvas. Mahasattvas means great beings. All beings. So that means you and me. So what do we do with this? How do we live with this? How do we use this? And find our truth force. Find our ahimsa. And not give in to despair or hatred. That's the koan of life. Any comments? Daniel, please unmute yourself.
Yeah, well, needless to say, John Lewis was a hero of mine. And, I was commenting on this at about the time he died. And this is true. So in my mind, because John Lewis, he's been in my life, my entire life up until a couple weeks ago. And so has Donald Trump. Most of it, he came around in the 80s, so he wasn't around my entire life, really. But the way that I have always, in my mind, envisioned Donald Trump is this short, angry, Napoleonic character, much like those little baby Trump balloons that the protesters float in the air. And that's true. I mean, that's how I thought the guy was in reality. And I was astounded to learn during the 2016 election season that the guy was 6'4" tall. I always thought that he was 5'2", 5'3", a little guy. And, when it came to John Lewis, I always envisioned that man was 8 foot tall, and I was astounded to learn that he was only 5'5". And I just find that's amazing. So that's the first comment that I have on John Lewis. And the second comment, he talks about going over the Edward Pettus Bridge, on more than one occasion. And I just think of that moment. And I've never walked across the bridge. I've never really seen it. I didn't know what he was really talking about. But I've seen the images of John Lewis walking across that bridge in his raincoat, his hands in his pocket, first in line. And he's talking about going over the bridge and that it's a very high bridge with an extremely large arc. So when you're walking across this bridge, you don't know what's on the other side, and I thought, well, maybe that's kind of exaggeration or whatever in the past, but then I watched John Lewis go across that bridge for the last time in his caisson, and you could see it. You know, he had no idea what was on the other side of that bridge. And it's just remarkable courage. I mean, something else. And so the last thing that I'll say about John Lewis is that picture of him, his mugshot. You know, and he has that half smile on his face. So I love that portrait of him. That's how I see it. I want to get that portrait, and I want to put on the bottom of it the right side of history. And I think of that picture of John Lewis, and it's hard not to compare it to that half smile that Suzuki Roshi has on his face on that picture in our sangha. And what's more so, I don't know who out there has read the Overstory, but there's a Mary, I know she has. There's a character, Kate has, good. There's a character, and to make it short, this character inherits her father's scroll depicting Arhats, and there's a part in the book where the character is asking her father, well, why do all these Arhats have this half smile on his face? And the father says, well, they figured out the secret. And that's how I view that mugshot portrait of John Lewis. It's beautiful. So what a loss, but what an example we all have.
Oh, Steve.
When you mentioned the spark that John Lewis mentioned, and liking that to the bodhisattva, that we're all bodhisattvas, it led me to rethink my resistance to the idea that we're all bodhisattvas that I expressed in a after a recent lecture, I think it was, there was at some point where you asked us all our responses to the idea that we're all bodhisattvas in some way. And I expressed some skepticism, and I said something like, look at the world. Look at how many bodhisattvas there are not out there, are people who are not acting like bodhisattvas. I just think it's so useful to put aside what I think I see in the world, and to say that that's a wonderful principle, to say, don't harm anyone because everyone has that spark, even if I can't see it, even if it's completely obscured. That ties in nicely with mentioning that probably our so-called president is afraid of offending the people who got him where he is. Reminds me of the bodhicitta, that tender heart in all of us, and that tender heart can be misunderstood and misused, and can be lead somebody to cower, or it can lead somebody to open up. And so I'm chewing on how those are related, but I feel they are. And I wasn't familiar with Sacha Graha. I usually don't take notes, but I had to write that one down. So this lecture felt just so timely.
Yeah. Well, it's Satya Graha. Zach?
I saw somebody I know recently and found out that he had met John, oh my gosh, I forgot his last name.
Lewis.
Lewis, John Lewis, a number of times. And he said he was the real deal, just like you think he was. Like when the cameras were off him and everything. And the other thing I wanted to say was I remember in the 60s, it was kind of the John Lewis, Martin Luther King part of the movement. There was the Malcolm X part, and then there was like the Black Panthers with machine guns. And I remember I was least attracted to the Martin Luther King, John Lewis wing. I mean, I never had a machine gun or anything, but I guess I was angry back then and thought, we can't just be passive, we have to do stuff. But it's interesting how history has proven that the nonviolent way, the more selfless way, has lasted a lot longer and has been more effective. And maybe for me personally, it's like being angry isn't a good place to be when you're trying to change the world and coming at it with more love and acceptance is the way to go.
Yeah, Novella?
I see you mentioned, what was it? I'm trying to get my thoughts. Of shooting one to save the 500. Who was that again?
I said that's a description of a bodhisattva. In other words, you might violate a precept because you see a greater good, and you take responsibility for the fact that you did violate the precept.
Yes, yes. I like that, and I resonate with that because there is that part of me that is like, okay, I have friends in all spectrums in terms of like the violent and the nonviolent. And it's like, I mean, I see the use of all of it, like, you know, like taking down the shooter, you know, and taking the responsibility for taking a life. So, you know, I see beyond just the nonviolent. I also see the violent, the use of the violent, and taking responsibility for that particular action to save the greater good, to enhance the goodness, you know, almost like taking a little poison to kill the intruder of thriving and being, and, you know, it's not, you know, we could see it as a virus or a cancer or something needs to get killed, right? You could say, you know, on the healing level, like we really want to enhance the thriving. We want to enhance, you know, even killing rats for agriculture is kind of a useful thing so the community could eat. We can't let the rats kind of eat everything. And so we've got to, I've got a relocation device for my pantry, but I wish it was so easy, you know, and when you're mowing down the fields, you don't know what's getting killed under, you know, lots of rats and mice with children are getting killed. So we could eat the grain that comes forth from that. Anyways, I kind of see it like that. You know, it's not fully one side or the other. Again, restoring balance you know, I guess this is the nature of this realm, right? Thank you for sharing, John Lewis.
Hi, Dana. It's good to see you.
Thank you. I miss you guys, too. Just getting used to my job, and it's like I was overwhelmed with just the process of that. But I love John Lewis, and for me, what stands out for me with him and his life, his beautiful life, is how he managed leadership and also support with humility. If you look at the photos, historical photos of the movement, at times he's in the forefront and he's going forward like a sword of truth, unafraid. And at other times you'll see him in the background of a crowded photo and he's just there supporting someone else in their effort. And or he's done whatever work, you know, that isn't celebrated, but probably made things go forward. And so I find that as a wonderful example for all of us now, that there's just times where we're that in the role of leadership, or we're in the role of support, or there's times when we have to look around and see who has been lifting the wings of others that maybe we haven't noticed. I'm with you. I think of him as, I mean, it just makes me cry to think of his humility and his courage, and how, because he was coming from his soul truth, which I really almost envy that he found his soul truth, you know, because I appreciate Mary saying it's your life's going, totally relate to that. You know, and you could live your whole life and not know what your soul truth is, and maybe it's never just one thing, I don't know. But I feel like that's what I'm hoping to find. And but anyway, so through that confusion, I find some encouragement in his life's meaning, and noticing him sometimes in the background, sometimes in the forefront, but always available when the time comes for him to stand up in his truth. And he does it in a way that never destroys. I like to listen to podcasts, and I've been listening to some of his interviews, long interviews, to hear his voice and the inflection in his voice and his stories from his memory. And one of the things I loved hearing him say was, you know, why do we have to be so mean? He was referring to Congress and politics. Why do we have to be so mean? And I like, yeah, why are we so mean? Anyway, that's part of Ahimsa too. Anyway, thank you, Mary. Thank you, everyone.
It's interesting that he said it that way. You know, why do we have to? In other words, he didn't set himself up here and all these other people. They just said we, which is called skillful means. You reminded me of something. I don't know if you folks listened to the funeral, but there was a talk by a man named Reverend Lawson, 91 years old, I think, who had been one of the people strategizing and thinking about long term and how to get from here to there. And he spoke about John Lewis being, you know, one of his students in effect, but also about his bravery, and that he was somebody who was always ready to go. And I think it was Lawson that spoke of this, that apparently when they were talking about how should they, how they should approach the riding a bus in interstate travel, that Lewis and a friend of his, just the two of them, went and got on a Greyhound bus in Washington or wherever and just rode the bus. You know, before the Freedom Riders, they just did it because maybe it was a test thing or something, but they just did it, and they didn't tell anybody that they were going to do it. That Lewis was always somebody who was out there, you know, not in an angry way, but he was ready. Should we march across the bridge? Well, Martin isn't here. He's not available tomorrow, but he's just saying, let's march. And the other thing I want to say, which is really, I don't know how, it's just useful to know. There's a place, it's changed its name a little bit, but it's called Highlander. And it's in the hills of Tennessee. And it has been a civil rights and labor organizer training center for decades, or a really long time. And we forget that a lot of these things, they didn't come out of nowhere. They came partly out of Highlander. And Rosa Parks, for example, was trained there and was very active in the civil rights movement before she sat in the bus. You know, she wasn't just, you know, she said, oh, she's this little seamstress and she was tired, and so she just said, no. There was a lot of work done, and a lot behind the scenes. Anyway, that's the little history for you. We should probably... Is there anything else? We probably should stop, but if there's anything else. Yeah, Daniel?
One last thing about John Lewis that should be remembered is he had a sense of humor.
Yeah, did you see his staff, his assistant chief of staff? She said that at the funeral, she said that he liked to instigate things. He'd say something outrageous. You know, and if you were new, you might bite or react. Or if you knew him, she'd say, "Ah, it's Congressman, I'm not going for that." And then he'd start laughing.
Yeah. Mary.
Uh-huh.
I just wanted to ask if I could talk to you for a minute after the.
Yes, we have a practice committee meeting. You can talk to us for a minute. Yeah.
Okay. Great. Thanks.
And. Okay. Oh, you're muted.
Sorry.
Beings are numberless. I vow to save them.